Hello and welcome to episode 21 of the Derailed Podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Fred. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
You tell me. It's nice to be sitting in the light at your house.
Yes, we've got power today.
Yeah, so I don't know if anyone saw, I posted a picture on Twitter. We have our game nights every Thursday, basically. We were playing Cologne, today being Monday. Mm. And at what time? About 10 o'clock, eh?
Yeah.
That our power went out. Yes. Thanks to load shedding.
Yeah.
We knew it was coming, though.
Yeah, I have an app. Well, I think most people in Joburg have the app that tells you when there's load shedding scheduled. And they only like announced it at like 9 or something. So
yeah,
we didn't know beforehand, but I had some candles available.
Yeah, we had some candles on hand. It was pretty tough to see some of the map stuff going on. But yes, luckily we had like developed it pretty well by that point.
Yeah, yeah. And we still had our phones with flashlights and things.
So. Yes, yeah. Luckily.
Yeah. Well, a romantic 18XX.
Yeah, exactly.
Candlelight 18XX.
Nothing says romance like stocks and train routes and, yeah, pump and dump. So I suppose that's pretty romantic. Yeah, we'll talk about that game just now, actually.
Okay, yeah.
There was much bumping and dumping, actually, in that game, now that I think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, more than we've seen in the past. I actually think it was quite an interesting play, so I'm kind of excited to talk about it.
It was interesting, yeah.
More interesting for you, I think, but we'll get to that.
Yes.
Yeah, so some news. We felt terrible last week. We wanted to shout out a new podcast, and we totally forgot. So we're overdue in that, but we just wanted to give a shout out to the Board Game Informant guys who've started a new podcast called Train Shuffling.
Yes.
Yeah. So I've already listened to the first episode, which was awesome. I don't know if you listened to it yet.
I haven't had a chance to.
But I see they're already out of their second one. And I'm actually really keen to listen to it because it's partially about print and plays.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is something I've dabbled in a little bit. I did a print and play of 1849. And I've kind of been looking at which one to do next. Yeah, there's a few. I want to try 1828. I don't know how much stuff it's going to be to print. That's J.C. Lawrence's design. I think it might have quite a lot of stuff, but I'm not sure. I want to look into that. I've been tempted by 18 Africa, although I've heard it's very weird.
Yeah,
it's very weird.
But apparently, we have to, just because it's Africa.
Well, exactly, yeah. I think that's kind of why I want to try it, but I'm not sure if we're actually going to like it.
Yeah.
I heard there's some random elements in it as well, which from an 18XX perspective doesn't sound too promising, but yeah, I don't know.
Not just random setup, some randomness while you play.
Yeah, like actual board game randomness.
Oh, wow.
I don't think you like roll dice to calculate your dividends or anything, but there's some element of randomness in it.
Your train delivers 3 dice, roll them to see the dividends.
Yeah, exactly. Can you imagine? But randomness isn't always bad. I mean, we played Irish Gauge recently, and that had a little bit of randomness in it as well. That, and I think what was interesting about the randomness was that you had to kind of mitigate it in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think we'll talk about that game sometime, actually.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to play it a couple more times because we've only played it the once. But I think we will discuss it sometime when we've played it a few more times. But yeah, so I think randomness doesn't have to necessarily be bad.
No, randomness isn't always bad.
But I saw some complaints about it.
Okay, it depends on how it's done.
Yeah, well, there's this differentiation between input randomness and output randomness that I've seen discussed before, which I find quite interesting. Whereas output randomness is sort of like you decide what you want to do and then the outcome is random.
Right.
That's output randomness. And then input randomness is you are given something random and then you have to decide what to do with it.
Yes.
So a lot of dice-based combat games have output randomness. I'm going to attack you here, roll some dice, and let's see how I did. Yeah. Input randomness I find a lot more interesting, which is stuff like Marco Polo.
Poker.
Yeah, poker's a good example, yeah, where you get given something random, and then it's up to you to make it work.
Yes, and basically the idea with input randomness is over a long period of time, everyone will get the same random input and make decisions based on that. So over a long time, it's which decisions you make versus which decisions other people make.
And in a game like Marco Polo, you get low dice and high dice, but they actually sometimes you want low dice and sometimes you want high dice. There's not necessarily this element of like, oh, I rolled super well or super poorly all the time, you know?
Yeah.
And stuff like that is cool because you can kind of figure out what am I going to do this round and how am I going to fit it into my overall strategy.
Yeah. Whereas output randomness can feel bad sometimes because you attack and you fail and then you attack again and you fail again and you attack again and you fail again. You can just like run bad.
Yeah. I think anyone who's played Catan
knows
how output randomness can feel. Yeah. Or Risk for that matter. Yeah. A lot of those games rely on some kind of heavy luck.
And a lot of them have some mitigation, but still you can just be unlucky completely.
Well, that's why people have come up with these Catan variants where to try and mitigate that, like where every time you roll and you don't get anything, you get like a token towards something or whatever. Okay. Yeah, but I don't know. I like the idea of that, but then I'm always like, why fix a bad game when you can just play a good one?
Yeah.
That seems to be a better choice. And I think that's often the case with board games because there's so much actually competition.
Oh, yeah. There's so much to choose from.
Yeah. Even 18XX is a lot to choose from.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Actually, I want to talk about that a bit because there's actually so many 18XX on the way right now. And that boom is coming.
Yeah.
Doesn't it feel like it?
Yes.
I wonder if we spoke about this in episode one. I feel like we might have because I remember part of our motivation for doing the podcast was feeling like
there's a boom coming,
right? Yeah. Like there's this wave and we wanted to sort of create a podcast that was accessible for all these new people potentially coming in because we were noobs, still are, I guess. But
yeah.
I do feel like we've gotten a lot better at least.
I hope so.
A lot more experienced. Yeah. And so it's pretty cool to see that happening and to see all these podcasts popping up as well. So when we started, the only active podcast that I think was active at the time was The Train Rush.
Yes.
In terms of a dedicated 18XX podcast, I think there are other heavy board game podcasts that would discuss 18XX games. But in terms of dedicated 18XX stuff, I feel like that was the only one.
I think so, yeah.
And now we have two more. So we have Wheel Tapping, which we've spoken about before, which just started very recently. They must be on their, I think, second episode now. And then Train Shuffling, which is also only on their second episode. So yeah, it's pretty cool to see.
Yes, it is. Yeah, very cool.
So it's kind of cool. There's now, that brings us up to four, including ours.
Yes.
Sort of active four regular 18XX ones, podcasts, which is great for us. Yeah. Because there's a ton of board game podcasts.
Yes.
But it's nice to have some 18XX stuff.
Yeah. Some dedicated stuff,
Because there's a lot of, I think, 18XX players who play, or board games who play 18XX, but there's also a lot of 18XX players who do not play other board games.
Yes, yeah.
I've noticed there's some people who have found 18XX, they're like, cool, that's enough for me.
Yeah, I'll stick to that,
Yeah, exactly. Pretty cool, man. Yeah, so there's a few coming, Ed. So there's Chesapeake, we've ordered that one.
Yes.
I think three of us have ordered that one.
Yes.
Of our four people in our gaming group, so that's quite funny.
But I don't think that's a bad thing because I think that's the kind of game that I will probably be able to play with other friends without you guys.
Right.
So it'll be good for me to have my own copy.
It is the sort of like beginner one. Yes. So yeah, I think it's cool.
Whereas some of the other ones, I'll probably only ever play with you guys, so we only need one copy in the group kind of thing.
And it was the first one in this sort of recent Kickstarter wave that we've seen, so I think we all jumped on board.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's been a few Kickstarters already this year. 1824 at a Kickstarter. 1861-67 is on Kickstarter right now. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's cool.
All Aboard Games is doing the sort of mass production treatment for 1817 and 18 Mechs as well.
Okay.
So basically, I think that they had almost more money than they needed from the Chesapeake Kickstarter. I could be wrong about that, but I think it did so well that they then were able to fund at the same time. So they were already doing all the stuff in China. So they said, okay, we're doing Chesapeake. Let's do the same treatment for Mechs and 17 as well.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, so you can actually still pre-order that right now. I think that it's closing sometime in December.
Oh, right. Okay.
Maybe the beginning of December or mid-December. I think it's closing pretty soon though. So if you do want to jump on board.
Yeah.
If you are fairly new, I'd probably recommend Mechs. That's the one I have pre-ordered.
Okay.
Yeah, 1817 is a very, very beastly game. Very financial, all kinds of stuff going on. You had that one attempt at playing it online.
Yeah, there's a lot to that one, a lot different.
Yeah, whereas I think 18 Mechs is sort of a 1830-ish kind of title, but with a few niggles thrown in and some interesting stuff going on. But fairly simple to understand and very well regarded as well.
Yeah, I've heard it mentioned quite a few times.
Yeah, so I'm very, very keen to try that. And I was actually going to order it from All Aboard Games when they were still doing the handmade stuff. But then they shut that down and then it was one of the ones that went to the mass production line. So
Okay.
Yeah. And then we've got 1862 coming from GMT. I think you might still be able to jump in on that. They're about to ship it. And then 1848, Australia is on P500 for GMT right now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Very cool.
Yeah.
We like more games, so.
Yes.
Yeah. Is there anything else we want to talk about, or should we move on to the mail?
No, I've got nothing. Let's do the mail.
Okay, sweet.
That right there is the mail. Now let's talk about the mail. Can we talk about the mail, please, Mac? I'm dying to talk about the mail for you all day, okay?
So we only got one mail, but it made up for it by being super, super long.
Okay.
I say that jokingly, but it was actually a really, really awesome mail. Really appreciated it. You must actually have a read of it when you have a chance, because it's really cool. So I'm going to do my best to kind of try and summarize it a little bit, but it's so nicely written that it almost doesn't deserve to be summarized. That's why I say you should have a read of it sometime as well. But it's from Kendall in Southwest Florida. So really, really nice mail. He spoke a little bit about his kind of journey through board games and through the kind of hobby, and how I think he's basically my age. He's in his mid-30s. Yeah, so he's basically around our age. And he says he's sort of been oscillating between hobbies, which is something I can really relate to.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
I went through this period of just like getting into new stuff and being super into it for a while, and then kind of dropping it and moving on to the next thing. And a lot of it were things that I'd come back to sporadically as well. But yeah, I feel like board gaming is the one that's really stuck. And Kendall says kind of the same thing. You know, he's always been someone who's jumped into everything with both feet. And it sounds very much like me, and I know you saying, and you know, you were like this as well. And there's a few hobbies for you that have stuck.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
Board gaming certainly has stuck for you, and I think cubing has stuck for you as
well. Yeah, and Go, I guess, as well. I kind of see that separate from board gaming.
Yeah, I think it kind of is.
It's a big enough topic,
In the same way, 18XX is kind of separate from board gaming. Yes. If you get into it enough, it's almost its own thing in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he talks a lot about podcasts and how kind of important they've been for him. He sort of got into them just as they were sort of starting to become quite mainstream. But yeah, he said he wanted to send us a mail because he did a podcast a while ago. And I think after like 12 episodes or something, he said they just kind of burnt out. And he said that maybe if he'd gotten an email like this one, he would have carried on. So he said, all good things come to an end, but please hear this. What you guys are doing is special, and not having received any emails such as this one throughout my venture into podcasting myself probably didn't keep that spark alive for me. So I feel it's important to send that boost your way for whatever it's worth. And certainly it's worth a lot, I think. Yeah. So thank you for that, Kendall.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I must say, it is good to get feedback. Because otherwise you're just sending these things out into the void and you don't know if people like it or not. So it is good. Like all the emails we've received, all the tweets and Instagram posts and everything have been, kind of good, very good feedback, and good to know that people enjoy it.
Yeah. And Kendall really does have a lot of really, really nice things to say. That's why I say that you should definitely read it.
Okay.
He just says basically that he really enjoys it. And yeah, he says that things said such as I have a podcast have become less impactful these days, as it's comparable to the 80s when one might say I have an album. Which is fair enough. but I think he goes on to say that kind of he feels like this one's been quite special and he's really enjoyed it. So yeah, I really do appreciate that. And
yeah,
I think
no, that's awesome. Thanks, Kendall.
Yeah, and I think it does really help, because I speak about this all the time, but sort of this idea of always feeling like you want to make something that people enjoy.
Yeah.
And I think especially doing it weekly, I'm always kind of thinking, okay, what are we going to talk about? How are we going to make this interesting? Are people going to even want to listen to this? So I think the feedback really, really helps, because I think unless you have that sort of like arrogant narcissistic quality that I really don't feel like I have, or maybe that's harsh, maybe just confidence.
Yeah.
Really, it's hard to just sort of be confident all the time that yes, this is worth listening to.
Yes, or
people are gonna love this shit, man. What a great episode. You know what I mean? So So but he says he appreciates the deep dives and how we sort of go back to games.
Okay.
And I think that's something that we've wanted to do, and something that's sort of evolved naturally. But it's been cool. So last week we revisited Rhineland, and I think it was great to do so.
Yeah.
Having played it almost before we were ready, and then to come back to it with a lot more experience, and it felt like a very different game.
Yes.
And I actually feel the same way about Cologne as well.
Yeah.
Having come back to it, it's sort of, we did a lot of things differently.
Yeah.
And we'd played that one a lot.
We had, yeah.
I would have said, you know, and to still come back with more experience and to be trying different things and for the game flow to feel very different, I think is quite interesting.
Yeah.
I think there's certainly benefit to revisiting these things and saying, hey, actually, we tried this again. And yeah, I think especially because these games are not easy to get and not cheap.
Yeah.
So I think that with other podcasts, you hear someone's played it once or twice, they talk about it, you're like, that sounds great, and you order it and it's by your door the next day.
Mm.
I think with 18XX's, I think a lot of people will often have it in the back of their mind for a while.
Yes.
Or they want to play the ones they have. So I think you've got a lot of time to come back and revisit something and say, okay, this is what we think now, or this is what's changed about our opinions, or this is how we see it.
Yeah.
Because people probably aren't sitting with it like, well, I've already ordered this and now you said something that makes me feel like maybe I won't enjoy this one as much as I thought I would, or whatever the case may be. Yeah. So,
and I think also that what makes it interesting to go back to 18XX's is I think each 18XX kind of highlights a different aspect of the game, but that aspect is in pretty much all 18XX's. So when something gets highlighted in one 18XX, you kind of see the impact of that, and then you can kind of apply that to a different 18XX where it's maybe not as big of a factor, but it's still there.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's something we've spoken about before, right? Like if I say, oh, I did the food strat in this game, it's sort of like, it's not going to help you.
Yeah.
When you're talking about Euros, sorry. So if I'm talking about some random Euro game, I'm like, oh, I totally abused the green track and massed corn. It's not going to help you when you're talking about some other game that has a totally different setup to it. So even though Euros can be quite similar in a lot of ways, I think that they tend to have fairly almost kind of linear strategies, I suppose. There's clearly divine paths to victory and you have to then find that path and optimize it and do it the best.
Yeah.
So there's not always a lot of crossover in that sense. There's crossover in like strategic thinking, but not in terms of actual strategy.
Yeah.
Whereas 18XX is kind of different to that. You can certainly learn a lot about how the wheels turn. And the more people learn, the more that changes because it's very dynamic. So people doing stuff differently. So it sounds like Kendall's sort of been diving into board games in general. He kind of got into it in the last few years. But he said the commonality amongst people he's met who are into board games is they have massive collections, constantly adding to their shelves and unable to get their games to the table.
Mm.
And I love this. He said, like a dick measuring contest for the impotent, which is a great way of putting it. Yeah. What I found quite interesting was that he said that when he got into the hobby, he had hopes and visions of his family and him sharing it together.
Yeah.
Which is quite funny. So I don't have, he said that no one was interested in it, right? He has five kids. Wow, Kendall, good job. two of which are adults and have moved out and it seemed too perfect. I couldn't have been more wrong. My elementary age son was the only one to take it in.
Okay.
And so I set out on BGG and incredibly managed to form a game group with strangers that has risen to 10 plus or more.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So this is very similar actually to my experience of this. Yeah. So I don't have any kids, but I'm married. And I originally got into board games because I wanted something my wife and I could do in the evening that wasn't...
Watching TV. Yeah.
Essentially, because that's kind of what we always did. And I thought, no, man, let's find an activity or something we can do. So I looked at like PS4 games, like co-op games and things like that. But then we'd both really liked board games in the past, like mainstream board games. And somehow I stumbled upon Catan and that kind of got it started. And then I found all these other games and I found this whole new world that existed. And my wife and I still play games together, but it sucked me in way more than her. And she's never played an 18XX with me and I don't think ever will. Yeah. So I can totally relate to this idea of it taking a life of its own.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a good something that gets repeated on the board game subreddit a lot is it's easier to turn board gamers into friends than friends into board gamers.
Right.
Because most board gamers are quite nice people. So if you just start playing with some people, you'll find some friends.
And that's very true, hey. So that's the first people I went to when I first started was I asked a bunch of my friends over and put this board game in front of them and like, cool guys, we're going to play. And I got pretty lukewarm responses. So I have one group of friends who are like sort of my childhood school friends and stuff. And they like it. Mm. But it's hard to get us together quite often. And I don't see them every week like I see you guys or whatever. But they'll play. They like them, right? But a bunch of other friends just were like,
Yeah. Yeah, I had very similar experience. Yeah. And then there's us who didn't know each other at all, started playing games together, and we do it every week, and we've become good friends. So
yeah, which is pretty awesome. Yeah. So I actually started this group. I'll take credit for it.
Yes, no, you deserve the credit for it.
Yeah, so actually what happened is there's Cyfric is such a small board game community, right, comparative to somewhere like the States. Mm. So there's a seller in Johannesburg who runs these board game days. I don't know if we've spoken about this before, but...
spoken about Timeless board games
Timeless board games. So they run these board game days. And I went to one of those by myself.
I just the same, yeah.
Intruded on random people's tables and played games all day. And that was pretty fun. But then what happened was I got added to a WhatsApp group. And I said, okay, is there anyone who has a group who's keen to play or whatever? This is the area I live in. And the three of you all replied to me saying... Hey, yeah, I wouldn't mind playing some games with someone or whatever. So I made a WhatsApp group of the four of us. Well, actually, it was five of us. And then we arranged to meet, and we've been meeting like pretty much every week since then.
Yes, yeah. And that's what, 3-4 years? How long ago is that?
Maybe 3 years ago, I want to say.
Yeah.
It could be longer though, actually.
Yeah, I think it's more than 3 years.
We should have checked our anniversary. I suppose we could check when our WhatsApp group was created.
I think it's between 3 and 4, yeah.
Yeah. And like you say, we've all become good friends beyond board games. Now we all play disc golf together.
Yes.
And we invite each other to each other's birthdays and all that kind of stuff and go on holidays together and everything. So it's been really, really cool.
Yeah.
Really, really cool. So yeah, I can totally relate, Kendall, to family and friends being less interested and then sort of, yeah, having this whole thing. So Kendall says, 18XX now has me by the neck, convincing me mightily that this is the big leagues. This is a stable base that this hobby in general terms is lacking. And it's been around since the 70s. I don't blame designers and publishers one bit for the way they market and distribute, but it's an impossible aspect to this industry and community as a whole. I would agree that this is the big leagues. There's something about it that when you discover it, you kind of go like, whoa.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I think especially if you're the kind of person who's into Euros and stuff like that.
Yes.
And then you play this and you're like, this is pretty incredible. There's something special in the way this is set up.
Yeah.
This is beyond, you know.
Yeah.
So Kendall says, I'm not here to tell you anything about 18XX. I'm as green as it gets. My dirty secret, I've played 46 once and I'm the proud owner of 89.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I think he speaks a little bit here about, he said he's convinced that this is the holy grail of board gaming.
18XX?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think the way which you two have chosen to evangelize about it is the exact method that very few others have been able to adapt for the sake of the state of the industry. Thanks, Kendall. And I definitely agree, it's definitely evangelism from our side. Yeah, so like I said, you should read this whole email because it's great. So yeah, they've got four of them that are interested in playing, and they've amassed quite a collection, but I think they've only played one game of 46 so far.
Okay.
So they have Ireland MX, which I think might be 1822 MX, which I wouldn't play as your second game, 44/54, 30, 89, and 46. Yeah, I would say definitely...
89 is a good one.
89 and 46, yeah.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed 46, certainly play it some more. And then 89, I think you might really enjoy. And I think those two are really cool to play, the two of them, because it will kind of give you a feel for what you like.
Yeah.
I feel like 89 is a very pure, like kind of stock-ish game. There's a lot of stock manipulation, a lot of movement and dumping of companies and that whole, a little bit of a mean edge, but not as mean as 1830, which can be very mean.
Yeah. Yeah. And 46 is more of a just run good companies type game.
Yeah. More the Euro-y type.
Yes. Yeah.
Of game. Yeah. So it will give you a good idea for what kind of games that you like.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, 89 has been amazing. I really, really like it a lot.
Yeah. It's a good game. Yeah.
It's become that game that... Yeah, I would just bust out any time and play because it's just a really nice experience. I feel like we know it quite well and it's interesting and fun, and there's not as mentally taxing as some of the other ones as well.
Yeah.
You just kind of get to play and have fun with this.
Yeah.
And so I'd say, don't be too intimidated by it. It does get a lot easier. I think he mentions in here the sort of struggle in getting it to the table, but... It honestly gets easier the more you play.
It does, yeah. But it's also difficult if people finish the day of work and they're tired to now learn a fairly heavy game. So,
sure.
But if you make a time maybe over a weekend when everyone has the time and there's no time pressure to learn it and then pretty soon you'll play during the week, no problem.
And you've already played 46, so you've got the hard part out of the way.
Yeah.
89 is pretty easy to learn as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's how we started, right? We started out playing it on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And like, yo, this is going to take a long time. And now, stuff like 89, we can quite easily fit into a weeknight.
Oh, yeah.
No. And it's not challenging at all. We can get that done in a few hours.
Yeah.
Quite easily. So, yeah, don't be afraid of it. You'll definitely get the hang of it, and it gets way, way easier.
Yeah.
You, as soon as you internalize the rules and stuff, yeah, becomes very, very easy. Yeah, so thank you so much, Kendall, for this email. I'm going to get Fred to read it as well. It was a really, really nice email, very complimentary, very encouraging. So, yeah, we really, really do appreciate it a lot. So
yeah, yeah. Thank you, Kendall. Thanks very much.
That was our only new email, unless you count the changes to the YouTube terms of service.
No.
Oh, man. You know what? There was something I wanted to talk about in our news section, if you can call it that. But
okay.
I'm just going to shove it here in the mail because whatever. We're not really that structured. I wanted to talk about our game that we're playing at the moment. So we have that Patreon game running with some of our patrons. We have an 1830 online game.
Yes.
Can we talk about how you guys are brutalizing me?
It's not personal. It's really not personal.
Yes.
I just needed the money, so I sold some shares.
So I think that after saying that the CA is the best private and whatever, I think I'm going to avoid it like the plague in the future. Because every game I've had it, it feels like everyone is like, he must be stopped and is out to kill me. Yo, those 1830 games have been a rude awakening for me, though, hey?
Mm.
We have played a few of those now, and they have been brutal, and I've been brutalized in a few of them. And you want to feel like you're being picked on, but then you realize that really, it's your fault. Like, you have no one to blame but yourself.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to make a case that someone's actually, like, picking on you, right? No, ganging up on
you. No one is picking on you. I sold in this stock round that you're talking about now. Basically, your company dropped to the bottom of the board. Like, you part the PRR at 67. It's now on 40, which is the bottom. So, and I sold all shares I owned. I didn't like sell some shares and hold on to some. I had to sell every single share I owned because I want to float something.
But what's funny is that it was on 67, then it went down to 40. Then I brought it back up to 60 and now it's down to 40 again.
Yes, yeah.
Like, let my people go. But I thought what is actually interesting about it, the reason I wanted to talk about it was that I feel like I made a critical error. So what happened, and I think it was actually an interesting strategic move and one that I hadn't really considered, and that's why I wanted to highlight it because I think it's actually quite cool.
Okay.
So what happened was I got the CNA and then someone else floated the PRR, obviously to stop me from doing it. You don't want to let the guy float the CA, get the CA and float the PRR, right? It's right. Just too much of an early advantage. So naturally, and then I bought into it as well because I was like, oh, okay, why not? I've got one share of it already. I think that I couldn't afford to float anything else. No, I wouldn't have been able to afford to float anything else. But remember, you need less to float the pen because of the one share that's already in play, right?
Mm.
So I bought into it maybe like 40% or 50% of it. We were almost like 50-50 in it or something like that. I don't really think I thought beyond that.
Okay.
Which is definitely a mistake. But I thought I was like, let me buy into this now. And then I guess I'll see what I want to do
next stock round.
This doesn't make sense for a lot of reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first one is that it's a poor performing company in the beginning.
Right.
So it just isn't really great. But the second thing is I'm not sure that you want to necessarily be 50-50 with someone in like the first stock round.
That early on.
Yeah. So what happened to me, and the reason I thought this was an interesting move, is that basically I had the pen dumped on me.
Mm.
And it was not, when I thought of the old pump and dump, right? The derailed pump and dump. I've heard that we're the only people who call it this.
Oh, really? No way.
Yeah, so whatever. But there it is. So when I think about that, I think of it happening at a time when trains are going to be rusted.
Right.
That is sort of level one.
Yes.
Of the old.
That's
pump
the
and
obvious
dump,
right? Time to dump.
That's
something.
The really obvious time to do it. And that's the time you really want to watch out for.
Yeah.
Someone's like run their twos and threes, but now they're about to get rusted and they want to dump that and start something fresh.
Mm.
Perfect, right? But what happened here was that this person basically, who is it, man? It was, I think it was Yeknom, but who is Yeknom in our Patreons? Is it Dan?
It's Michigan Dan, yes.
It is you, Dan, you rat bastard. Okay. Okay, so Dan the bastard did this to me, right? And no, I actually thought this was great. So what he did was...
It was great if it weren't you.
Exactly. So what he did was he bought up four trains. He bought 3 2s and a 3.
Okay.
Let me tell you, the pen absolutely cannot use those trains early.
Right.
It just doesn't have enough routes to run to make good use of those trains. He bought up all those trains. He bought his own private and then he dumped it on. And so he left me with this cashless company that I can't even sell my CA into.
That's smart. And what it also does is he's basically using now your company to push the trains so that the next company floats has access to better trains.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's smart.
He destroyed me with that, though. Like, I've never seen someone do that where, like, right at the beginning, just because I was basically 50-50 with it, he could just say, okay, I'm literally just going to do this to screw you over, basically. But also extract some money from it by selling his private.
Yeah.
And then just dumping it on me straight away. So it was almost like a reset. Like in stock round two, he was basically floating a company that he would have in stock round one.
Yes.
It was kind of like that.
But access to a one level better train at least.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's probably still going to go through the cycle of selling down that stock round two company to float one that can get into permanent trains and things like that.
Yes.
He's only delayed about one stock round, and he didn't make a huge amount of money on it, but he made money in selling his privates.
Yeah.
The rest of it was literally just to leave me with this stupid company with dumb trains that I can't use and no cash.
Yeah.
So the other thing was, because I was 50-50 with him, when he sells down, I can't even sell that down now to the presidency.
No, because the market has 50% in
it. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
you're stuck with some low value shares. Yeah.
Dan, you bastard. Yeah, yeah, so
it's a good move. Yeah.
It's a good move. And I think I just wanted to comment on it because it's one that I hadn't really considered.
It is interesting because normally when I want to dump a company, I also try to like get rid of all of the trains in that company. But in this case, it doesn't matter. Like that company has a bunch of trains, but those trains aren't very useful to you. So even though you're taking over a company with assets, those assets aren't worth a lot. Yeah, it's interesting.
I may have the timing wrong. You might not have done it in the very first RR. It might have been the second RR, but it was very early on.
Yeah,
I think he barely ran any trains at all. He might have actually lost a small amount of money on the stocks because it might have moved down.
Yeah.
He had to buy trains and whatever, but...
Yeah,
he dumped it on me, man.
Yeah.
But it was a dump at a time when I wasn't really expecting one. But in retrospect, it was really stupid of me to buy into the same company. It didn't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Especially not that company.
Mm.
The value of that company is in its late game potential and in its that you can float it for cheap.
Yeah.
That's kind of the main value in that company, right? Early on, its revenues aren't great. You're not going to get good payouts. So if I was just going like investor strat and investing in a company and then looking to get out of it later, that was the wrong one to invest into.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really thinking very clearly about
interesting.
That.
Interesting. Yeah.
But I wanted to comment on it just to warn people, just be careful of that or use it.
Yeah, or use it. Yeah.
Or use it. Don't necessarily think of dumping a company as something that you... time at the perfect moment.
Yes.
You can absolutely empty a company very quickly of its money.
Yeah.
And then just dump it on someone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because why not?
Yeah.
Why not indeed? So yeah, thanks for that, Dan. Really appreciate it. Thanks for the podcast content, bro.
I like it.
Oh, should we talk Cologne?
Yes. Yeah. So we played Cologne on Thursday. That was the candlelight game.
Yes, yeah.
So we thought we'd go back to Cologne with the merging companies and give that another go. And I found, so for all our games, not just Cologne, every single 18XX we play now, that initial private auction is becoming more and more interesting.
Way more interesting,
It used to be just a thing we kind of put, like, kind of had just a step you... get over so that you can get to the game.
Yeah, when someone used to bid, we used to be like, whoa, big spender. paying an extra $5 for that.
We would just buy everything at face value and get to the real game, you know?
Yeah.
And those private auctions are becoming more and more interesting. Yeah, so in this one, You specifically.
So let me just, before you start, just in case people haven't listened to the episode or kind of forgot just a little bit about what cologne is, maybe, or the rules differences or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's one of those sort of like 1835-y ones where it has a relatively flat stock market. When you sell shares, they only go down one space no matter how many you sell. There is no IPO versus market value. It's always the same price. Mm. So you don't, you set a price for it, but whatever its market value is, that's what it costs.
Yeah.
And when you sell it, there's no bank pool. Just goes back to the pile.
Right.
Basically. Yeah. There are only three companies that you can actually float.
Mm.
And five companies total in the game. It's a very small map. And only five corporations. It plays two to four players. So basically, the gist of it is that at the beginning, you start with five minor companies. And those minor companies have some amounts of percentage in green and red companies, which will form as a result of a merge later on in the game.
Yes.
The green company first, then the red company.
Mm.
So the miners will operate at the beginning, and they basically fill this board with track very, very quickly. And when the companies merge, all these miner stations where they started will flip over their tokens, and those will become stations for the merged companies.
Right.
And the merged company will take all of their assets.
Yes.
All their trains, all their money.
Assets combined, yeah.
Yeah, so they miners pay 50-50. I think that's always the case with miners. They pay 50% to you and 50% to the treasury.
Yes.
Yeah, so that is kind of the gist of it, I think. Mergers are pretty simple. Everyone will have some amount of stake in the green and red companies. There will always be 50% stake in each company after the initial auction is over.
Mm.
And basically, you get these merger votes that happen at a certain point in the game. And if 50% or if the controlling amount of people choose to...
The majority, yeah.
Majority choose to vote for the merge, then the merge happens.
Yeah. And there's also a forced merge later. If everyone votes no or the majority votes no, then at a certain train, the merge is forced. Right. So you won't ever have a game where like the merge just never happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think like going into this, I think your strategy was to not buy one of those minor companies from the beginning. Am I right?
Yes. So Simon and I have this long-running freaking feud about minor companies in this game because he said they're overpowered, and that annoyed me because I felt like he wasn't in any position to comment on game balance for a game he's like played once and we don't really understand or whatever. But he insisted that they were overpowered, and I said, no, they're not. We had these long debates about it, about the value of it, about, yeah, they pay and they give you stocks, but those stocks never increase in value. Whereas if you buy other stocks, they do increase in value, blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
All this stuff, right? And then I saw a comment from JC Lawrence, who obviously talks a lot about 18xx games. We've mentioned him a lot. I saw a comment he made. He doesn't like Cologne very much, but he said that he feels like all the miners and all the privates are terrible, and your best strategy is to avoid them
yes.
as much as possible.
Mm.
And so I showed this to Simon. He said, nonsense. And so we kind of had this running joke that we'll play Cologne again and let Simon have all the private all the miners.
All the miners, right? Yeah.
We didn't do that because that probably would have been a bit absurd. And I don't think even possible.
I don't think it is possible, no.
Yeah, you have to pay money.
You can't afford to buy all of them.
Right, yeah. But I ended up with no miners.
Yes.
I ended up with no miners because I was doing the JC strat. I was like, let me just try avoid as much as possible. So there are five miners. There's three green ones and two red ones. And then there's three privates. So one of the privates gives you the president's share in one of the corporations.
One of the other corporations.
One of the others.
The other three, yeah.
The other three non-mergeable ones. Yeah. The other one is basically the investor strat.
Yeah.
Private. It costs 150 and it gives you 30 per OR, and it only closes when the six train is bought, unlike the others which close when the five train is bought.
Yeah.
And you can't sell it to a corporation. And the last one gives you a 10% share of the red company.
Right.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing about...
Which is one of the merge companies.
So as with most 18xx's, all the private companies and the miners have to be basically auctioned off before,
right.
before the... The kind of normal game starts. So, and that means that there's 50% of red and green in play.
Yes.
And the other shares aren't available for sale until the merge happens, or until the merge is available.
Right. So, yeah. So basically how it works is that for the green company, once the first four train is bought, you can now buy shares in the green company and you can vote for a merge.
Yeah.
The red company is one up from that. So it's the five train. Yeah. We can start buying shares, and the merge is force for the green company on the five train and force for the red company on the six train.
Yes. Yeah.
I think we may have actually, now that I'm thinking about it, vaguely messed up a rule, but I don't think it'll matter too much.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you need 50% of the voting power to agree to the merge. I don't think that you as 30 can force it over Simon who has 20. The reason I say it won't matter is that it was only the two of you that had shares in those companies, and I don't think either of you would have declined it. It made sense for both of you to just agree to that merge take it from there, because it wouldn't have made any difference.
Okay, but we must look out for that.
But I think it's interesting if I, for example, have that one share that pays revenue, but it's only worth 10% of red.
Mm.
I may want to decline the merge.
Yeah, because you will lose that.
Mm, I wonder. I must double check that.
Yeah.
I don't think it would have mattered for our game, but interesting to check. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you need 50% of voters to say yes to the merge,
or just the majority,
I think it might be the 50% though.
Okay.
I was just thinking about that just now. Yeah.
Okay.
Not a big deal for our game either way, so that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, so there is 50% in play after that initial stock round. And for the first time in Cologne, this time we actually had to do the thing where we start decreasing private companies' values until someone takes it.
Yes,
because there was one miner company over that you didn't want, because you wanted to play the no miner company game.
Right.
And I didn't really want it, because if I buy it, I can't float anything else. So I had some stakes in the miner companies, but also had enough money at that point to float something else, like one of those other three companies, which is what I wanted to do. But then it decreased in value. I think Simon had less money or something. So it came to a point where either I could take it for fairly cheap, or let Simon take it for fairly cheap, and I just took it for fairly cheap and then went with the miner company game.
Yeah, the one I ended up with was the investor strat one.
Mm.
Which left me enough money to behind to float a company. They floated 50%.
Did you also have the director share in the other one? That private?
No, I didn't have that one.
Who had that one?
I guess either you or Simon must have. Maybe it was Simon who had that one.
Must be,
yeah. Yeah. So
yeah, so it was just the three of us, you, me, Simon.
Right. And I think three players probably the best count for this game.
It was good,
say. Yeah. But it was, so I'm not convinced that private I had was really worth it.
Okay.
I don't know if it's great. So it's 150 and it pays 30, right? So it needs to pay five times to break even.
Right. And you can't sell it to a corporation.
No.
Yeah.
Five euros. I don't know if the income potential on that is enough, as opposed to spending 150 on stocks.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Because, I mean, how many euros did I squeeze out of that? So the interesting thing about this is you get 2 euros after every stock round, no matter what. No matter what the phase.
Always 2 euros.
It's always 2 euros after every stock round.
Hmm. Yeah, that is interesting, because in most 18xx's you have one. So in most 18xx's, all companies are going to lose share value by the second stock round.
Right.
In this one, everyone is back to even, usually, because you've built a tile, you've run a route in the second OR. And you've decreased your stock price, you've upped your stock price again, so you're back to even. Yeah, so, well, shall we start with the results?
I'm sure you'd like that, wouldn't you?
I would like that. So I did win this one, finally. It feels like a long time since I've won an 18xx.
I don't know, I feel like you've been on a streak, man.
No, I've had some...
I need to play 89 again so I can collect...
I've had some interesting losses.
89 seems to be the only one I win.
And you were second?
Yes.
Yeah. With the no miner company strat?
Yes.
And Simon was third.
And I must say, so to comment on the no miner thing or whatever, my general feeling about them was that they're fine. I didn't feel like you have to avoid them, and I didn't feel like you have to have them.
Yeah.
Basically what happened was right around the time it merged, each time a company merged, I sort of looked at my value in shares and cash on hand and things like that versus you guys. And each time I felt like, yeah, it's about even.
Okay.
Like your green and red shares were worth way more than my shares, but I had more shares or whatever. And so it kind of like balanced.
Right. Yeah.
You know, or I had more cash or whatever. So yeah, I went the route of just floating regular companies. I didn't have any stakes in the green or red companies. And it felt pretty even at the time of the merge.
Right.
I kind of looked at it and I was like, okay, I'd say we ended up in similar places.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess, but I mean, that's obviously just one observation, but I didn't walk away feeling like, wow, not having a minor has really screwed me.
Yes.
And I didn't feel like, wow, having a minor really screwed you.
Yeah.
Either.
Yeah. No, I don't think it did, but I also wasn't all in on just the minors, I don't think. No. Which I've kind of done in the past. In previous plays, I've just also thought, like, minors are good. Let's just buy as many as we can.
Right.
But yeah, you shouldn't overpay for them.
I think you kind of want to have one so you're not bored, though. Yeah, it's pretty boring not having a minor, man. Like, you guys, there's five minor companies that are operating from the beginning of the game.
And you couldn't float anything in the first stock round.
No, yeah. So it was boring, man. It was like, yo, to sit through five companies and I don't get to.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of cool just to have them just to play the game.
Yeah. But the flip side of that that's interesting is you have these five companies operating twice before the next stock round. So it's five companies laying tiles twice each.
Yeah.
So by the time you did float something, there were a lot of tiles on the board already.
There was a lot of track, man. Yeah. That's 10 track tiles on the board already.
Yes. So you had some decisions there of where to float and what you can link up to and things. So that board kind of develops fairly quickly, I think, in Cologne. Yeah. Yeah. So we did make a rules mistake that I think we should mention.
Well, Simon certainly wants us to mention
it. It's something interesting to look out for because most of the 18xx's we play, when you sell a share, it goes to the bank pool.
Right.
And we all know you can't have more than 50% shares in the bank pool. So it's fairly easy to know when you can sell a share and when you can't. The rule in this one, there's no bank pool for the shares. So if you sell a share, it just goes to the original stack of shares. But so the rule in this one is almost flipped where I think the rule says at least 50% of shares have to be in the hands of players.
Right.
Yeah. So that means that you either have to count the pile of shares on the board or you have to count the number of shares in players' hands. So we made a mistake where I sold shares after a merge. So after the which one merges first again? The
green one,
The green one. So the green one merged, and then in that very first stock round, I sold shares in green. But no one had bought any of the other 50% shares of green yet, so I wasn't allowed to sell those shares. So that's something to look out for. It's definitely something we missed. Luckily, Simon caught it, and we were able to undo it.
Yeah.
But that is something to watch out for, I think.
Yeah, definitely, because you don't have that visual thing of seeing a bunch of shares in the bank pool and going like, oh, okay, I can't sell or whatever.
Yeah.
It makes sense. It's kind of the same rule.
It is the same. It comes down to the same thing. But
same principle, yeah.
Yeah, but because we used to have shares in that kind of IPO and shares in the bank pool, it's easy to just see how many shares there are in the bank pool, whereas you don't have that.
So practically what it means is that there's no division between IPO and bank pool, right? It's all the same. So you can't really sell shares unless people have bought shares.
Yes.
Is what it essentially means. So in something like 89, you could buy five shares, float a company, and then sell three shares in the next stock round.
Yeah.
You can't do that here.
Yeah.
Because someone else has to have bought three shares for you to sell three shares.
Exactly.
Three shares past the 50%.
Yeah. So it does make a difference.
It makes a difference, but remember, there's only five corporations. Mm. So people absolutely are buying your shares.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not just going to sit there.
But it is a timing thing with that. Mm. Yeah.
Especially early on, there's only three corporations that can be floated in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
So I realized something. One of those obvious things that we, every now and then, we realize something that's very obvious once we discuss it. But these minor companies are almost like partial cap companies because you don't get extra capital from the bank when they float.
Right.
You do get when they merge. So when they merge, you get extra, was it 400 from the bank?
Yeah, you get an extra 400 plus their treasuries.
Yeah, so all the minor treasuries. Companies' treasuries combined plus 400. But these minor companies are things that are forced to float early because as soon as you buy them, they effectively float. But the amount you pay for them is the amount they have in their treasury.
Right.
So you're basically floating something without gaining any extra money.
No free money.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a partial cap thing.
Whereas everything else in Cologne is full cap.
Yes. Yeah. So if you float one of the other three companies, you get that free money from the bank. You get control of some more money than you put in.
Right.
Yeah. The other thing that you always say about those miners is there's while they're operating, while they're not merged, they don't have stock, they don't have tokens on the stock chart.
Right.
They just operate in numerical order. So there's no stock price that moves up. But they do start, when they merge, they do start higher than anything else can be parred at.
Yes,
they so do. It is kind of like they do increase in value to a degree. But I do think it's important to float them as early as possible.
Well, I guess the thing is your money doesn't increase in value.
No.
It does slightly. So I think one of the ones that gives 20%, you have to pay 210 for it. And it's worth 240 in stock.
Right.
So there's a slight increase there, but not nearly as much of an increase as you're going to get floating another company and pushing its stock.
Yeah, for something else that has operated the number of times that those miners have operated, the share price would have increased by a lot more than they did.
The worst case scenario with those miners is when you kind of get tied up with them.
Yeah.
So when you don't have a three chain, this can especially happen with the red miners.
Yeah.
Because the red ones merge later. So the green ones can be merged when the four chain is bought, and the four chain is one that rusts the twos.
Mm.
So oftentimes when the green companies are having their trains rusted, they merge.
Mm.
Not necessarily true for the red companies.
Right.
So it is possible to sit with a red miner with rusted trains that literally just does nothing. You are not liable to buy a train.
For a miner, yes.
For a miner.
Yeah, yeah.
But it can just sit there and your money's tied up in it.
Yes. Yeah.
You can pay your own money into miners if you want to buy trains.
Mm.
You can contribute freely to the treasury. Whatever you want to do, you can actually pay money into miners to buy trains. But it's questionable whether or not you actually want to do that.
It all depends on who will gain control in the merger.
Right, and what kind of stake you're going
to
have.
Yeah, because you don't want to buy a train in a miner company that you will hand over to someone else.
Yeah, and essentially doing a quote-unquote emergency buy of like a three train or a four train, I don't know, it feels kind of bad. That's the point of the game where you want to be amassing more shares and things like that. It just feels like awkward timing to sink $300 into a four train or whatever when you could be buying stock with that.
Yeah.
So it doesn't feel great. So they are not without risk.
No.
I would say that happened to me in a game. My trains got rusted. You guys pushed the trains very quickly somehow. My trains got rusted and I couldn't even afford to buy trains with cash in hand. So I sat there not getting revenue from the miners and not getting any cash in hand.
Yeah.
It was awful. Awful. They were really bad for me.
Yeah. On the flip side, your shares in that miner don't lose value either when you're not operating, but you're also not getting any money. It's money that's stuck for you.
Well, if they're not operating, they're not worth having.
Yeah.
Right?
No, because absolutely,
their stock price never goes up or down. So the only money you're really getting from them is running routes.
Yeah.
So you have to be running those routes to make them worthwhile.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's quite interesting.
Yeah.
So what was interesting for me about this play was that we checked the rules a lot.
Mm.
And I would have said Cologne's an easy game.
It is an easy game, but it does have some differences.
I think for me, it was testament to how much more we're trying to pull levers or find edges or do things. How much more experienced we are. The fact that we were checking the rules so much and like, how does this work? How does this work?
Yeah.
What happens with this? Can I do this?
Yeah, and but it had been a while since we've played Cologne and we've played a lot of others in between. So,
No, that's definitely it. I think that the first time we played it, we didn't check the rules nearly as much there because we just stayed in the general lines.
Yes, we were playing close to the edges now.
So we've had this discussion before on whether or not Cologne is a stock game, an operational game, or whatever. And I've been thinking about this. So I think I said to you the last time we spoke about it that maybe it's quite an operational game, and you kind of disagreed with that because I said I felt like a lot of it was won or played on the map.
Mm.
And then you pointed out there was a lot of stock stuff that happened, and then I agreed with you. I have now revised my whole thing. So for me, I feel like Cologne is, I'm going to call it a portfolio management game.
Okay.
So your play of this was, I think, incredible. I think you did super well in this game. And you thumped us. You beat me by like 1,300 or something.
Something like that, yeah.
It was a lot, dude. You beat me by a lot. And I thought that we were close.
Yeah.
I thought I had a chance to win, but I thought unlikely that I was going to win.
Right.
But I didn't think I was going to get destroyed either.
Yeah.
And I think you played really well. And I think what Cologne is about is constantly reevaluating where to build the best portfolio.
Mm.
You will hit certificate limit very quickly in this game.
Mm.
And the fate of companies is not set in stone.
Yeah.
We always thought the merged companies will generally perform well. It wasn't true for the green company in this game.
Right, yeah.
It got destroyed, right? One company was paying great dividends, but its stock was way down. Red was paying pretty average dividends, but its stock climbed monumentally. And when you get to the end of the stock chart, there's some huge jumps of like 30 or something per jump. Or 50, I think, like the last one was. I think I was on like 250 and you were on like 300 or something. There was some huge jump gap right near the end. It might have been 30 or 50 or something like that. I think that I lost this game because I had 5 shares that I could not get rid of in a company that wasn't performing well enough.
Right.
And when your certificate limit is 12, that is...
Yeah, 5.
Death.
5 bad shares is a lot.
That was death for me. And I couldn't get rid of them because of this rule with the shares. You can't just throw them in the bank and say good riddance.
Yeah, yeah.
If no one else wants to buy those shares...
Yeah, you can't sell them.
You can't sell them. So it's about running a good company, sure, because if you have 50% of something, you don't want it to be a dog.
Mm.
But you were constantly shifting where you thought you could find value.
Mm.
You had the green company. You had control of the green company. The green company was a great company, actually.
Yeah.
And then you dumped it twice. Once illegally and once legally, right?
Yes.
And it turned out to be a great move. And when you did it the second time, the legal time, I was like, I don't know if this is a good idea, man.
Yeah.
But it worked out perfectly
because
then I think you took control of the red company or you kept control of the red company or something like that.
Yeah, so that was interesting. So the green company is the first one to merge. So I had 30% in green and Simon had 20% in green. And I had 20% in red, Simon had 30% in red. And you had nothing of those miners, right? So the green company merged first and then I tried to dump it, but illegally, like you say, I wasn't allowed to sell shares. So we undid that. And then I had it operate again, and I floated another company in the meantime, one of the other three. So what I did then is I basically moved all the money from the red company after the merge into my other company by shuffling trains. So I basically bought a train from, with the red company, I bought a train from my other company with all of its money, and the other company operated after the red company. And then I bought one train back with $1. So the red company at $1. And then in that stock round, I dumped that company onto Simon by selling shares. So he had 20% or whatever. So in the first stock round after the merge, I started buying up shares. And it was a good company, like you say. It had assets, it had trains, it had money. It was performing well. So I started buying shares and Simon started buying shares. So he kept up with me in shares.
Yeah, you ended up 60-40.
Exactly. And then, but I was first in the next stock round. So then in the next stock round, I can't remember if the red company merged then in that set of ORs. It might have merged in that set of ORs. So then I did that whole move, all the money, all the assets basically from red into my other company. And then dumped that company onto Simon and then started buying up the red shares. And Simon didn't have enough money to keep ahead of the red shares. So I basically forcefully took over, like a hostile takeover of the red company. Yeah, and then I had assets to transfer back to that. Well, I can't remember if I actually did that. So I think the red company just had enough money to carry on happily.
Yeah, so that's the thing, right? Because the certificate limits are low and because there's not that many companies... If you strap someone with, if you turn the green company into a bad company, basically,
yeah,
it was left with one four train and no treasury.
Yeah.
So Simon then had to run that route over and over, which wasn't great. And the red company had like 2 6 trains or something insane. I don't know. It had some like amazing set of trains, right? And was running. And then, you gave all of those to the gray company, hey?
I think I did,
yeah. You gave the gray company amazing trains. The red company had a decent route, but not as good as gray. Gray was like the highest dividend in the game.
Yeah.
Along with mine, actually. Mine was also very high dividends. Yeah.
So I just want to jump in here. So the other interesting thing you can do with these miners in between is I was using my miner companies to build track for my gray company, basically.
Yeah.
So I floated the gray company as soon as possible. And then... effectively, the gray company was building 2 track tiles per OR because my red miner was helping it. So my goal was to have the gray company be the one that runs the amazing routes.
which is definitely something you can do, right? If you look where the miners start, you can see where each of them start. You can find one that starts close to a company, then just get that miner and then float that company and then literally just use the one to service the other, essentially.
Yeah, man.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, so you turned the green company into a bit of a dog, massively elevated your other two companies, and then bought into my company, which was doing really well.
Yeah.
And that's all the shares you can have.
Yeah.
You can only have shares in about three companies if you have big portions of them, right?
Yeah.
So there you go. Now you'd set yourself up. You have one company doing really, really well that you have supplied. You've dumped the green company on Simon.
Yeah.
You've made the red company into a great one. And Simon was trying to do well with the red one. So he wasn't trashing its stock or anything like that. But then you took control of it.
Yeah.
And you got a higher stake. You got the president's share. So now you have 20% of it.
Yeah.
And then now you are free to buy other shares and you just buy into the last best company, which was one of mine.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember how much I had in your company, but it could have been 40%. So just that thing of, you know, limiting your lead.
Yeah. So for me, Cologne, there's a whole element of predicting which companies are going to do well in time to properly invest in those companies. And also, you can change the fate of companies as well. Like, you can fiddle with them and put yourself in a winning position. There's a lot of portfolio maneuvering there.
Right.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, the map stuff was fine. I think after playing Rhineland, this map felt easy.
Yeah, the map is still interesting because when the miners merge, they have a lot of stations on the map because each miner company puts a station down and those stations become the merged company stations. So that's why, if those companies have a lot of trains, they can run a lot of routes with all those stations. And that's why, like, decreasing that green company down to one train was so bad. Like, when it had trains, it was an amazing company. But when you're down to one train with three or four station markers out there, it doesn't matter.
And an empty treasury. And it was, and because you don't have six, seven corporations lying around that you can float or briefcase for a bunch of money, right?
Yeah.
It's not possible. There was nothing Simon could float to pump money back into that treasury.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. A well-timed dump in that game can actually be incredible.
Yeah.
Because you can saddle someone with an empty treasury and no way to reinvest into it.
And it could be difficult to see because it's a good company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, I've decided that Cologne is very much about that kind of portfolio management. You have very limited certificate slots. There's limited companies. You need to figure out which ones are going to be the best and which ones you can make the best.
Yeah.
What sunk me was just having five shares in a company that I couldn't get rid of.
Mm. Yeah, you couldn't sell them.
And it just wasn't good enough. It wasn't good enough. I think it's worth having a piece of those merged companies because their stock values, if they run consistently, their stock values do get very high. Because they start at 120, they are going to get high. So it's worth having a piece of them, certainly.
Yeah.
So it's worth, if you don't have any of the miners, you can just buy those shares when they become available as well.
Yes. Yeah.
But certainly worth having a small stake in those.
Yeah. Yeah, and they'll be available because after the merge, there are five shares in the available for sale. So you can buy at least one.
Yeah. And even though you don't drop down a block for every stock sold, you can definitely trash stock in this game. The first time you illegally did that thing with the green company, you actually withheld a couple of times to sort of ruin the stock even more.
Yes.
Yeah, which is a little bit risky because it ruins your stock as well and how much money you get back from it. But
the money I withheld, I transferred to my other corporation.
Yeah, but you used it to reinvest into other. So I think there's a lot of interesting stuff you can do.
Mm.
I thought you played it very well. I think it was a really good game for you.
Yeah, thanks. I was very happy with the play and the outcome.
I like it when someone makes big moves and wins.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like I made any big moves. I feel like I played a boring game and I was like, ugh. I deserve second place because I just played like a reasonably solid game, but just kind of a boring game. I don't know. And I felt like it was kind of a boring game for me. I didn't get involved in the miners. I just like floated these corps. I played pretty safe. I don't know. I feel like you had more fun and you won. Right. So yeah, I think it's worth being in the miners early, at least having a piece of one of them just so you have something to do. It gives you options in terms of building for other corporations. It gives you at least a piece of those merged companies that you can play around with. I value it just in terms of options.
Yes.
But I don't think you need it. I will agree with old JC that you can avoid every single thing in that starting auction and come out of the other end fine. I do think that that's true.
Yeah.
You don't have to have any of that because it isn't like an 1830 where you need privates to sell in and recapitalize and all that stuff. It's a very, very different game.
Mm,
very, very different.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
You do not have to be the person who has the minor companies.
Yeah, but I think you do want to float one of the other three companies in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, so in a four-player game, there could be quite a race.
Yeah, well, if other people had the miners, you'd definitely be able to float one of them. There's always going to be someone who can't.
But even people who have miners, I think they still want to be...
Yeah.
Also float one of the other ones.
Well, again, man, it's about... You want to float them, but I don't know. You don't need to control a lot of companies. You just need to have the best pieces of the best companies.
Mm.
You don't even need to control them. You didn't really win that game because you were in control of them. You won that game because your portfolio looked the best.
Yeah. Yeah.
We all had roughly the same cash.
Mm.
There weren't huge differences in our amounts of cash. I think Simon might have not had as much cash. I'm not sure. Maybe he did have a bunch. I'm not sure. But you had roughly the same cash as me. You didn't have a huge amount more or anything.
Okay. Yeah.
But your portfolio was way better. And I had those five dog shares that I couldn't get rid of.
Right. Yeah.
So I think if you can just... I think you can control nothing and just have the best pieces of everything.
Mm.
Because if you have the best pieces of everything, other people are stuck with crap that they can't get rid of.
Right, yeah.
I think in that game, there's always going to be one or two companies that aren't great.
Yeah.
But the way to have the best piece is to figure out earlier what the best is going to be.
Yes.
Or to manipulate them into being the best.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's quite an interesting game, actually. I think there's... It was interesting playing it again. I feel like there's more... depth to it, I want to say.
Mm.
I don't know, it was interesting. And I still recommend it as a two-player game. I still think it's a cool two-player game.
We must play it again two-player, actually.
Yeah, definitely. Simon doesn't like this one, so I think we'll leave it on the shelf for a while.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. And I'm glad that he's even said, like, okay, I'm not going to try and criticize it. There's nothing wrong with the game.
Mm.
I just don't like it.
Yeah.
And I was
which
like,
is fine. Yeah.
That's totally fair. Like, you don't have to.
Yeah.
That's totally fair. Yeah, it's something about the way it works where it just doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah.
Which is cool. But yeah, we like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I still like it a lot.
Ooh, what about your listing?
Well, I was just looking at that. It's at the top of my list.
Is it still at the top, eh?
Yeah. I don't think I'm going to move it down after this play. I mean, I won.
That is true. Where is it in my list? Ooh, it's at number two.
Oh, you've got a decision. What's number one for you?
89.
Oh, that's a tough one. 89 is my number two. So our one and twos are... Cologne in 89.
Yeah. You see, I feel like I'd feel comfortable moving Cologne down. But, oh man, this is actually really hard. You know what's wrong with my list is that 1849 is at number five. And I think maybe I really like 1849. I think we need to play it again and then I'm going to revise this list. Because I think I really like 49. I think it's sitting at number five and that's a travesty. I think it could come all the way up to like number two.
Okay.
I think it's really good.
Mm, okay. Yeah, I'm keen to play it.
Yeah, man, I still want to just explore that one a little bit more. And I love the random order of the companies in that.
Mm, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah,
yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
That's a cool game. 49 is cool.
Yeah.
I still want to fiddle with some stuff there.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Shall we move on?
Yeah, man. So Africa segment.
Yes.
Okay. So I had to talk about this thing because I think it's so African, but it's been hilarious. Have you seen this news story in the past couple of days? Have you seen our baboon?
Yes, in Fourways.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we live in Fourways, right? So there's been a baboon roaming around Fourways.
Mm.
Fourways is a very urban, very residential area. I don't know what you've heard about Africa, but it's not normal for baboons to be chilling around people's houses.
We don't actually have lions in our backyards.
Yeah, exactly, right? So... And like it's kind of been freaking people out because baboons are pretty dangerous.
They can
be
very dangerous.
Baboons are badass.
They are strong.
Yeah, they are not your standard monkey.
You don't want to mess with them.
Hardcore fangs as well. Like fangs, man. Like these huge canines and stuff.
Yeah.
They can be very, very dangerous. People have been freaking out a little bit. They've been in complexes. They've been in people's gardens.
Wow.
Like this dude has been cruising around. And there's all these like videos on Twitter and stuff. So everyone's following this baboon around, right? So they're trying to track him.
Mm.
They say they want to try trap him if they can and put him back in the wild, so to speak. But they can't dart him, they say, because it's very dangerous.
Why is it dangerous?
Because he'll like freak out and like run up a tree or jump over a wall or something. It like takes a while to kick in. He could run into traffic.
Okay.
So they say that darting is like absolutely not an option.
So something like a net or something.
Yeah, they literally need to like trap him. but they can't really get close to him. So they're kind of just following him around at the moment. Mm. There's a bunch of organizations following this baboon around, and he has made it so far, dude. So apparently this is quite normal. Like oftentimes males will get kicked out of the troop or whatever, and they go off and they can be alone for as long as like 4 months, and they find another troop to join, basically, right? So this dude has come all the way from Lanseria, apparently.
Okay.
Which is, how many k's from here? Like 20?
It's a little bit out of
30. It's city. Pretty far. Yeah. It's like, it's at least like 20 kilometers away.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what that is in freedom units. 12 miles?
I don't know.
Something like that, right? Something like that, right? But it's quite far. Mm. It's quite far away. But apparently this dude comes to Four Ways every year around Christmas.
Oh, really?
That's what I've heard. Yeah. He makes the trek from Lanseria to Four Ways.
Oh, wow.
This time, though, he seems to be lost. So this guy literally walked down my road past my house. I wasn't there when it happened. But he's been cruising right by us. He made it. He was on the highway for a while.
Wow.
He was going up the N1. He ate someone's rabbit. Someone's pet rabbit got eaten in my road.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's been crazy. It's been the most hilarious story. So now he's made it all the way to Sandton.
Oh, is he in Sandton now?
Yeah. So Sandton is like the kind of CBD of Joburg. All the banks and stuff are there, the shopping malls. It's like the rich area or whatever of Joburg. So now he's been cruising around Sandton.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're just kind of hoping that he makes his way back to a wilder area.
Yeah.
But it's hilarious because we're just getting all these video updates and it's like reported sightings and everyone's like posting on social media like spotted over here, and everyone's been tracking this poor dude's progress. He has no idea how famous he is.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would be very scared if I saw him in the streets.
They are
dangerous.
No, you don't want to mess with them. You don't want to feed them and stuff.
Yeah.
So we do see baboons a lot. I mean, if you drive a lot of places, if you drive, you'll see them in the road and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, if you go down to the coast or something, like like my parents live in Natal and there are monkeys galore there. Yeah. Like you see monkeys in the roads every day, pretty much there.
But seeing them like walking down the street by your house, if you live in like a big urban area, is not an everyday thing, and it's been very funny.
Yeah.
I must say I felt a bit guilty, but I really laughed when it said that he ate someone's rabbit. I was like, oh my God. What?
That's horrible.
Yeah, because it's just like things coming through WhatsApp groups like, he's on Crawford. He just ate someone's pet rabbit. Like, what? What is the story, man?
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, so it's pretty funny.
Yeah,
so that's Baboon Bro. So I thought that was a very funny South African story.
Yeah.
The other one that's been in the news, I don't know if you've seen this KFC proposal. Have you seen this?
Yes, I saw that, yeah. That's actually a cool story. I love this. It's a very heartwarming story.
It's very, very cool. So basically, this dude proposed to his girlfriend, now fiance, I guess, in a KFC, right?
Yes.
And it was a full KFC.
Yeah.
So he got down on one knee and someone filmed it. He did the whole thing.
Well, a lot of people filmed it. So there was quite a crowd around them. Yeah.
There was quite a crowd. So this actually got a lot of press because some journalist said something mean. She's like, yes, men in South Africa are so broke that they propose at KFC or whatever.
But man, like, if you watch the video, you can see that he really loves her. Like, you can see it's all like legit and genuine. And
I think that probably these people don't have a lot of money.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that KFC was actually probably like a treat in inverted commas.
It might be where they met. It might be where they went for a first date or something. It might have special meaning to them. We don't know.
Absolutely. But it was pretty hectic because there was a huge crowd in this KFC. It was a busy, it was probably like lunchtime or something.
But they were both so super happy, man.
Everyone was clapping and cheering. Yeah. You can try search. It's been on Twitter, hashtag KFC proposal.
Yeah.
But what's really, really cool is that like it went viral in South Africa, right? And all these brands are like reaching out and giving them so much free stuff.
Yes.
Have you seen how much free stuff they've got?
I haven't seen everything, but didn't KFC offer to cater their wedding or something like that?
Yeah, so KFC's like, we'll cater their wedding. So like it's like typical brand stuff. Like, yeah, brands are doing it for recognition, whatever. But who cares? It's cool for them.
It's amazing for them. They're going to get an amazing wedding for no money, man.
Coke was like, we'll cater all the soft drinks. Kalula, which is one of our local airlines, were like, we will include a 5-night stay in Cape Town or something. Some other place was like, cool, we'll give you a honeymoon in Mozambique.
Mm.
Dude, so much stuff. Audi was like, oh, you're going to need a car to get around. Like, we'll give you a car for a year or something.
That's awesome.
DStv was like, cool, we'll hook you up with, OpenView. I don't know if you know OpenView. It's one of our TV providers. Yeah, they're like, we'll hook you up with a 50-inch TV and an OpenView decoder. And DStv was like, we'll throw in a DStv decoder and like a subscription for a year or whatever.
Yeah,
crazy, no, man. Awesome. Like, but so much stuff, dude. Like, Woolworths was like, here's a 10 grand voucher. 10,000 rand is like $700.
Yeah.
But that's a lot more here than it is in America.
$700 for groceries goes a lot further here than in
the US. Yeah. So, yeah, it's amazing, man. Mm. And then, like, Fila or something, or like Puma or something like that was like,
okay,
oh, we'll give you a 10 grand voucher each for our stores.
Oh, wow.
Takealot, who's a local retailer, was like, we'll give you 10 grand to spend at our thing. So when I say 10 grand, that's 10,000 rand. So it's basically 15 rand to a dollar, just so you guys know.
Yeah.
So 10 grand is, again, like $700 or whatever.
Yeah.
So cool, man. No, that's like, awesome. Dude, like you go to the Facebook page and it's all these brands. And I mean, brands you've never heard of, dude. Mm. Like some suit company was like, cool, we'll hook you up with a suit for the wedding.
Oh, wow.
Like wedding photographers, like I'll shoot the wedding. Like
I
saw an article, and I don't know how true this is.
Yeah.
But I saw an article where someone had tallied how much free stuff they got and added up to 2 million rands.
Really?
Worth of stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, which is huge.
That's amazing. Yo.
Which is, oh man, I keep wanting to do conversions. I don't know, $150,000, $200,000. Yeah. Something like that, guys. Yeah. I don't know. Something like that. But 2 million rand, put it in Google.
in spending power, it's probably $200,000.
Yeah. Something like that, right? Yeah. So amazing, man. Just like so cool. And I think that these people aren't people with a lot of money. So,
no.
I mean, I would like 2 million rands worth of stuff. Don't get me wrong. But I think for them, it's probably like life changing.
Yeah.
So really.
No, that's awesome. That's
just
very
the
good
coolest story, man. Yeah.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed that. So those are kind of the two, like, I guess, like, hot stories in South Africa this week that I also thought were really funny.
Yes,
so,
yeah,
pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, okay, cool. I guess that's it. Sweet. Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for listening.
Yes, thanks very much.
Cool. Cheers.
Cheers. If you would like to get in touch with us, we are at derailed18xx on Instagram and Twitter. You can email us, derailed18xx@gmail.com. And we're on Patreon at patreon.com/derailed18xx. Thanks for listening.